Hey, it's Steve Stewart from Money Plan SOS. Thanks so much for downloading this older episode. I need to let you know that this is not going to be an episode like all the others because this episode originally was part of my April Fool's Day joke in 2014. What I did was took over three shows that were not my own. I took over Jared Easley's show. He's the host of Starve the Doubts, and I turned the tables on him and interviewed him on his own show. I took over the Cash Car Convert show, episode 23, where I talked about how to get out of the car payment business. And then Joe Salcihi, who is the host of the Stacking Benjamin show, and I, we switched seats. I went to his basement and recorded his show, and then he recorded his show in my basement. I know basement's just kind of an acronym for our studios. But then we released our shows on each other's streams. So what that means is I'm actually hosting a show over on his website, and he's released a show here that you're about to listen to now. It's a lot of fun. I hope you enjoy it. I just felt that it was very important to let you know because this is not going to be a show like any of my others because, well, I'm not even here in this one. So it's really fun. Joe's a great guy. He does a great show, and you'll hear a lot of variety in here. And if you like it, go check out the other episodes that he has over at stackingbenjamins.com. In the meantime, sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Hey, everybody. This is Joe Salcihi from the Stacking Benjamins podcast, and you're listening to Steve Stewart helping everyday Americans to pay attention, not interest. It is Steve Stewart, isn't it? I think you're listening to Steve Stewart. I don't know. Let's check it out. Hello and welcome to this episode of the Money Plan SOS podcast. I'm your host, Steve. I'm not Steve. I'm Joe Salcihi, normally on the Stacking Benjamins podcast, and this is the show that helps you pay attention, not interest. I've always wanted to say that, by the way.
It sounds much cooler when he says it, though.
It does. Usually the goal of the show is to, one, teach us how to live on less than we make, two, show the importance of avoiding and eliminating debt from our lives, and three, expose those manipulative messages from those trying to get at your money. And a guy who is always trying to get at your money, that's a horrible segue.
Yeah, how terrible is this?
It is the guy, we call him the other guy because he's a practicing certified financial planner on our show. It's OG.
Yes, that is me. That is I.
That'd be me. How about that? Pirates taking over the Money Plan SOS podcast.
Awesome.
Yes.
I thought about our next Google Hangout. I'm going to have to do that little pirate costume thing.
How can you be a pirate and wear a bag over your head at the same time?
I have a funny story about that we'll share on another show at another time.
Well, speaking of funny stories, let's talk about the stories we have on today's show because we have some good ones. We're going to talk about billionaires in the United States. The new list of billionaires just came out. We're going to walk through who those people are. The second thing we're going to talk about are parents and their graduates and how parents are getting a little bit over-involved, OG, in their kids' lives.
A little grabby.
Yeah, maybe. We're going to talk about some of these internet deals, Groupon, Living Social. Is it worth the time to do all these things? Including, we're going to talk about travel deals. And finally, one of our favorite segments to do on any show, so we thought we'd bring it to all of you Money Plan SOS fans, the top five ways to pay off your mortgage more quickly.
Cool.
How about that? Let's move. This is so fun. I've never hijacked a podcast before.
It's much like hijacking it. Never mind.
we would not know. That is purely...
NSA, I'm just kidding. Do not predator drone me. This is just a joke. It's very too soon, I know, but...
We're going to start off like we do on our normal Stacking Benjamin show. Well, a lot of this is going to be like our normal Stacking Benjamin show. We're going to start off with our headlines for the last week. And the first one I have for you, OG, is this. In MSN Money, they just released the list of the world's wealthiest people, the billionaires 2014. And I was surprised
guess
to see
who made the list.
Well, not you. What's up with that?
No, I'm on there.
The year's biggest gainer was, who do you think is the biggest gainer in billionaire territory over the last year?
Ooh. Like from not on the list to on the list or on the list to higher on the list?
On the list to higher on the list. His fortune jumped to $15.2 billion from $15.2 billion to $28.5 billion as shares of his stock soared.
Well, it could be anything. I mean, the market was up 30% last year, so Zuckerberg.
Amen, brother. Mark Zuckerberg shares a Facebook sword after, as you know, doing very poorly right out of the gate. The company's COO, Sheryl Sandberg, joins the ranks of billionaires for the first time, as does Facebook's longtime vice president, Jeff Rothschild, according to this article. Also, thanks to a $19 billion deal with Facebook, WhatsApp founder Jan Koum and Brian Acton join the ranks of Silicon Valley's wealthiest people. The Dropbox CEO, you and I use Dropbox constantly, Drew Houston, is up there. A lot of people in Silicon Valley, roughly two-thirds of the billionaires built their own fortune. And I thought that that was interesting, that a third of it is family money, right? Like the Walton family that built Walmart. But two-thirds of these people started like you and I are here in Steve's basement.
Well, and I wonder how many generations back even the generational money is. I can't imagine that they're much more than one or two generations at most. But maybe Rockefellers, if there's some people like that still on there. The Heinz family, they're probably a little bit generationally. But usually it doesn't last. Usually once the kids and grandkids get involved, it gets too diluted and too many stupid people that have no... Well, they get too removed from the work.
Right.
You know, like the story about Sam Walton driving every day in a pickup truck and overalls and, you know, never bought a new car and all that sort of stuff. That's lost on great-grandson Jack, who just turned 18 and got part of his trust money and bought a Ferrari.
My daughter's roommate's dad worked for Walmart. He lives up in the Fayetteville area up there near Bentonville, where headquarters is. And he actually was a stock boy at Walmart when he was in high school. And Sam Walton would come into the store and he would wear overalls and he had this old Ford pickup.
Right.
And he said one day he walks in and he walks over to him and Sam Walton, the founder of Walmart, says, "You got a coat hanger?" And he's like, "Yes, sir. Yes, Mr. Walton. May I ask why?" "I lock my keys in my car." So he's out there with Sam Walton, who's a billionaire at that point, many times over, trying to jimmy the lock,
trying to get the lock
on his old Ford. And there's another story that this guy told, which was Sam Walton one day found out that one of his vice presidents had purchased an expensive, very expensive Mercedes automobile and called him into his office and goes, "Hey, heard that you bought a new Mercedes." And the guy goes, yeah, it's really great. He goes, "There's a lot of companies where that's fantastic. And it's great that you're making a lot of money, but that's not our culture. And I can't have you driving up to a Walmart in a brand new Mercedes. So you got to take it back." And the guy said, "Well, I really don't want to take it back." "You don't have to take it back.
Right.
You just can't work here.
But you got to take it back."
So guess what the guy did?
Yeah. He put it in the garage.
Yeah.
And drove it around on Sundays. Like that.
We all dream about becoming a billionaire. The best way to be a billionaire is to work your butt off. I think the going home port. Speaking of work your butt off, how about this one? This is from Financial Advisor magazine, and it was also in the Wall Street Journal. Helicopter parents, OG, crash kids' job interviews. What's an employer to do? So parents get really involved now in their kids' life in high school, far more than when
some parents.
Some parents, right?
Let's not get too crazy.
In college, I have twins that are at the University of Texas and the University of Arkansas, and at both of those orientations, they told us as parents, do not call your professor on your kid's behalf. I mean, could you ever imagine when you were in college, OG, having your mom call up and say, "I want to dispute that"? No, probably not. But what's funny is they tell those stories for a reason, right? Because somebody's done it before.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now it goes further. These top students out of major colleges, their parents are now want to come along to the interview. Their parents want to make sure that this is good for junior. What do you think about that?
I think that is the problem in America. How's that?
That is
the summation of irresponsibility or lack of responsibility. Not irresponsibility, because that's being irresponsible, but the lack of non-responsibility.
Lack of the child taking control of their own life.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's funny is that with a lot of millennials, the phrase, "Can my parents attend my job interview," is coming up more and more, especially with the upper crust of the upper crust of people.
Well, and there's something to be said about, you know, I don't have a problem with somebody's parents helping them arrange the interview, right? Like you say, I
have this friend.
I know. Yeah. So your son, let's say Joe, your son gets done with college and he's thinking he wants to get a job at IBM. Okay. So I know a couple of people at IBM, or I know a recruiter that recruits for IBM. For you to say, mention it, for me to say, you know what, I know the guy, I know the gal over there at IBM. Let me give her a call and let's see if I can make something happen for him. That's different. That's using the power of your network. to get what you want. But for you to say, and I'm going to go along with him and make sure he lands this thing and doesn't say anything stupid. Oh, God almighty. Come on.
Why did you say that, son? Let me answer this one for him.
Yeah, he doesn't mean that. What he means to say is, yes, he will be here at 8 o'clock in the morning. Despite the fact that he's never been up for 8 o'clock anything ever in his entire life.
And she's tugging the kid's ear.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is ugly.
Gross.
The bad news here is that top firms are finding that they are having to agree to this if they want to get some of the top talent that's out there.
I think they're giving in too soon.
Yeah, bring your parent to work day.
Yeah.
Those are the headlines this week. Who's big on travel deals, OG?
Oh, yeah.
You were sitting here just before the show talking about getting on planes just so you could get the mileage to score some free tickets.
Yeah, elite status or something. It sounds like a waste of time, but if you can get yourself some upgrades by spending a half a day in the air every so often, so be it. It's an investment in myself.
We have this regular segment of the Stacking Benjamin Show that we're bringing along to the Money Plan SOS audience, and that is our roundtable where we take some of the greatest minds in financial writing from around the internet, bring them together, and we have a discussion. And today we have Len Penzo Pullipant and Miranda Marquit. Hey, let's jump on over to My Dad's Shortwave, where every week we talk to some of the greatest minds in financial writing about something we read on the internet. We might talk about debt, we might talk about insurance, maybe concepts about financial planning. We have three regulars who are on our show every week, with one who takes a week off, so we can add a new voice to every show. So let's fire up the shortwave, and we'll start off in Atlanta, Georgia, with the one, the only Pullipant from Afford Anything.
Hey, how's it going?
Welcome to the party here at Money Plan SOS.
Oh, I'm so happy to be taking over this show. It's time we do it.
Isn't it time? His listeners are going to have no idea what hit them.
You know what? But they will be so happy.
No more of that, Steve. Yada, 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 Steve.
Yeah, let the real finance people.
Yeah, right. And speaking of yada, 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 from Los Angeles, California, it's Len Penzo from the crazily named LenPenzo.com.
Groovy, man, groovy. Hey, Joe, I got to tell you something. They put a new drug rehab center right down the street from me the other day. And I was walking by it, and I noticed there's a sign there right in the kind of the front area there, and it says, keep off the grass.
Did you hear that story, by the way, about lady selling Girl Scout cookies, or the girl selling Girl Scout cookies, and she like doubled her yearly sales by hanging out in front of one of those legal medical marijuana clinics with her Girl Scout cookies? That girl,
no, but that's awesome.
I know, she's an entrepreneur. Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of entrepreneur, our special guest this week, you like my segues? I got this deal. Joining the discussion, we're absolutely thrilled to have a woman you've seen all over the internet. She's maybe the most prolific financial writer in consumer finance and other financial topics writer that I've met. I don't even know if that's a real sentence, but it's Miranda Marquit from Planting Money Seeds.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I'm a little intimidated because I've never done this sort of round table thing before.
Uh-oh, so. You're in big trouble.
I know, right?
Yeah, and you're not on our Joker podcast. You're on a real podcast, Money Plan SOS, too.
I know. I've met him, and he's legit.
I know. The bar is high, sure. Miranda. The bar is high. So let's do this, guys. We have an article that you'll find at LenPenzo.com, and you'll also find on the show notes at StackingBenjamins.com. And Len, you were talking about how you went into Priceline jail.
Yes, I did. And it wasn't for keeping on the grass either.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you what happened. So I was looking to rent a minivan. And
just for fun, to pick up chicks, right?
Well, no, we were going on a family. It was for a family vacation.
Oh.
You know, I kept all the places I was looking at, I was kind of stuck at about $100. And that was, you know, that was okay. But when I was looking, I came across this ad that said, it was from Priceline, and it said, name your own price and save up to 40%. And I was thinking, geez, 40%? You know, let me do the math here. I'm finding $100, 40% off of that. Hey, maybe I can get something from Priceline for $60.
Awesome.
So, yeah. So I go to Priceline, and you know, you guys have all done, have you guys done that before, Priceline? You know, where you put in the bid?
Kind of.
So you go there and you have to be kind of generic. You have to say, well, what kind of car do you want? So I want a minivan. Okay, do you want a premium minivan? Okay, I'll have a premium minivan. And then you put in your bid. So I said, okay, well, 40% off 100 is $60, right? So I put in my bid for $60. And what happens? The screen comes back and it says, nope, sorry, buddy, a little too low. You might want to try $71, $72. Well, I was like, you know what? That's false advertising. They said 40% off, and I put $60 back in again.
Oh, because you're going to win against the computer algorithm.
I'm going to get it. Yeah, I'm going to get it. It comes back again and says, uh-uh, ain't going to happen. So I said, fine, I'll take their advice. And I think I put in $70 the third time. Well, the third time what came up is basically it said, sorry, you've been basically banned from the site for 24 hours because you put in a duplicate bid, and I was banned from bidding. So essentially, I was in the Priceline jail for 24 hours where I couldn't do anything. So that is the Priceline jail.
That's horrible.
It is horrible. Absolutely. And the thing gets me is they don't tell you that right in the beginning. They don't set the rules. They just expect you to, I guess, understand that you can't do duplicate bids, I guess. But it was kind of irritating.
Did you end up using Priceline?
No.
Okay. All right. But you did get your minivan.
Yes, I got my minivan. I think I got it for like $85 or something like that.
Oh, cool.
In the end, so.
Well, let's talk about this. I think that's a good segue into online deals and whether you've scored some good online deals, whether it be in travel or maybe we'll even talk about Groupon, Living Social, those kind of things. Paula, you said you used Priceline just yesterday.
I do. I use Priceline constantly. At pretty much any time that either myself or my boyfriend Will are traveling for business, or which is actually pretty often, we always book ourselves into places with Priceline.
So do you think that this issue is Lens issue, or is Priceline not being upfront with people?
It's a bit of both. I mean, I've been using it so long that I've learned how to use the system. And so I guess I take for granted that everyone knows that. But Len makes a really good point. The website doesn't tell you that they're going to ban you if you put in a duplicate bid. I mean, shouldn't they give you a warning? Or better yet, shouldn't they just not let you submit the duplicate bid? Shouldn't they just give you an error message when you try to do it?
Yeah.
Thank you, Paula. Thank you.
So what you're saying, Paula, is that you understand that no means no. And you're also saying that Len's only kind of a moron.
So one of the things that Priceline does is when you name a bid and if it doesn't get accepted, they make you change your criteria around if you want to put in the same bid. So I actually did this last night. I was bidding on a hotel room in Morristown, New Jersey, and bid wasn't accepted.
Which is where you go for all your vacations, right?
Yeah, it's where I go to pick up chicks in my minivan.
That's right. Yeah. Sorry.
Put some grass in the glove compartment. Go cruise to Morristown.
Steve is never going to have us back. Never, ever.
Hey, Paula, does Will know about this?
the picking up chicks?
Yeah.
He figures it out when they grow into full chickens and start laying eggs.
Oh, those chicks.
Oh, man.
Paula's here all week. Tip your wait, Steph. But anyway, so you went to Morristown and you just did a deal on Priceline.
Yeah, I did the deal on Priceline. My first offer didn't get accepted, so then I had to expand my search criteria. So what I did is I put in the same bid, but I expanded the geographic range, and I ended up getting a hotel in North Parsippany.
Oh, beautiful North Parsippany.
Exactly. It's gorgeous this time of year.
Miranda, do you use Priceline at all?
No.
Yeah, what kind of stuff do you use when you go to score your internet deal on travel or cars or those types of things?
Yeah. My problem with Priceline and Hotwire and those kinds of things is I kind of want what I want. And now I've tried to use Priceline in the past, but, you know, like Paul was saying, you have to switch your criteria around. You have to maybe do something that you maybe aren't really interested in doing. And I want what I want. So I kind of don't use those. I do like to use the aggregators like Orbitz and Travelocity and Expedia. I do like to use those to kind of look for the best deals as far as picking what I want. My other issue is I live in Utah. And so when you're flying, especially with the airplane flights, when you're flying out of Utah or flying into Utah, you're kind of limited into what's available for you.
Yeah.
And so you can save a lot of money by doing the red eye, but I don't want to do the red eye. So, I mean, that's kind of my thing. And convenience is important to me. So I am willing to pay a little bit more to get what I want when I want it. But yes, I instead just kind of leave it to the aggregators, the Orbitzes of the world. and just kind of go from there.
Well, I was thinking if you want exactly what you want, that you go through the actual sites themselves, like Southwest or whatever it might be, and use their point system, you know, so that you score.
And I do that too. Because I just booked my spring break trip to San Diego using my Southwest points. So
yeah. And did you get your minivan?
Yeah.
And are you going to stay off the grass?
I don't know about that.
Len, besides that for your cars, I mean, do you use the point system like American Airlines, Delta? You know, they all have these points, or do you prefer to go through the aggregators and score money right now?
No, well, I use the point system for like Marriott, if you're talking about that. I use that a lot, and that's been very helpful. You know, I did an experiment, I guess you call it an experiment, a few years ago, where I compared Expedia and Orbitz and Priceline and a few others. And it really, there's almost very little difference between all of them, maybe within a couple dollars. I don't see how these different sites compete because they all give you pretty much the same price.
Well, what's interesting about that is that, I don't know if you saw the news recently, but Travelocity pretty much threw in the towel, and now Expedia runs Travelocity's search program for deals.
No, I did not see that.
Yeah, so if you go to Travelocity, you're going to Expedia.
Can I bring up one more thing, though, when
Absolutely, you're looking on?
And I don't know if this qualifies, Joe, so you can scold me if I'm up. But, you know, one thing I always do when I'm on the computer, if you're buying things, and maybe not hotels so much or rental cars, but if you're buying other things on the net, I always go to a place like RetailMeNot or Coupons.com or CurrentCodes.com looking for coupon codes and promotional codes. That always usually pays off for me.
Yeah, Paul, how about you? Let's get away from travel here. When you're looking for things, let's say a set of tires on your minivan, do you hit up like RetailMeNot or one of those sites?
If I'm going to make a purchase, then right before I hit the buy button, right before I confirm the purchase, I'll just Google the name of the company and then the words coupon code. And then I'll see what comes up through a Google search.
And something almost always comes up, doesn't it?
Sometimes does or does not work. I mean, there's always something that comes up, but sometimes you type that in and it says, sorry, we don't accept that anymore. That's expired. So I feel like it's a 50-50 shot.
Miranda, what about these things like Groupon or Living Social, these daily deal sites? Do you follow those? I mean, is that a great way to get deals?
Yeah, but mostly I'm annoyed with them. I've signed up for them just to see how they work and see if they offer me anything that I want. I think the thing you run into, are you buying something to buy it because it's a deal, or are you buying it because you would get it anyway? But I do sign up for them, and I did use it once. There was a deal for a buy one, get one free for a space mission thing. So I got a buy one, get one for me and my son to go down to Salt Lake and do this, I don't know, thing. And so, and it turned out to be this huge disappointment. So I was kind of turned off by that. But I do.
The experience was a huge disappointment?
Yeah, the experience was. Working with Living Social was not a huge disappointment.
Okay.
That worked out okay.
Yeah.
I am actually signed up for cities because, you know, I have to put in what city you want to sign up for.
Yes.
I actually sign up for cities that I travel to frequently. So I'm actually signed up for like Las Vegas and Phoenix and New York so that, you know, I get daily deals from there. And if it happens to coincide with a trip I'm taking to a place that I normally go, then yeah, it works out really nice. And yeah, I can get the deal.
Pay a lot less money for it. Len, do you do the same thing? Do you follow these online deals or not?
You mean like Groupon and stuff like that?
Yeah.
And boy, I hope, here goes my Groupon sponsorship. But, you know, I heard Groupon was basically, the problem I hear with it, it's not always a deal, okay? They'll make it sound like a deal, but it's not a deal. I've heard of stories where they'll say, oh, you got 50% off, you know, here's something for 20 bucks, it's 50% off. But then if you did your homework and you actually went to, looked on the web, you could find out that you could actually get it for $15 anyway. So,
well, they're required.
I kind of stay away from Groupon. Just, I've heard too many stories.
Yeah, here's the deal with that. They're required by Groupon to offer 50% off. However, like you said, sometimes if you go to the place's website at first, what you find out they're offering for 50% off is just a come on deal of a substandard piece of their product, which I guess brings up the point, Paula. Whenever you're doing any of these things, don't just take the deal, do your homework about the company first.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the bottom line is don't be incentivized to buy something that you otherwise wouldn't have purchased. It's like Miranda said, a lot of these daily deal sites can tempt you into thinking, oh, wow, half off of a rafting trip. Sure. But you never would have done that in the first place.
Yeah.
don't spend money on something that you otherwise wouldn't have bought, because then you're not actually saving money, you're spending more. But if there's something that you need, like maybe an oil change, then sure, go on Groupon, check out the prices there, go on the regular website, check out the prices, and if you can get a better deal through Groupon or Scout Mob or Living Social, then go for it.
Do you think now that grass is legal in Colorado, do you think Groupon has sales there for that?
The Groupon grass deal?
Whoa, you just blew my mind.
Dude, you just blew my mind. Right? A half off cookies while you stand in line.
That's right.
Right, sure. And then you get there and you find out the half off, it doesn't refer to the price. At first, you're only getting half a cookie. But anyway.
Might help.
Man,
for picking
I ate the other half.
Miranda, you had no idea, did you, that this is what you're getting into? Let's talk about that for a second. When you talk, Paula, about things that you weren't going to buy, like the rafting trip, and suddenly you're doing it, right? I mean, I think, Miranda, it all has to start with your budget. And these could probably be, I imagine, a very dangerous place if you're somebody who has a lot of debt.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think you have to go back into, can I afford this? I mean, am I buying it because it's 50% off, or do I actually need it? What was I going to spend the money on anyway? And is it important to me? That's the other thing that I think also that Paula talks a lot about as well is it important to me? Is it something that's just going to be, okay. Because I mean, after I went down and did that stupid space mission thing, it wasn't what my son and I had thought. And it was not as fun as we thought it would be. I was kind of like, I feel bad that I got to buy one, get one free. And yeah, it was a great deal. But at the same time, it was not, you know, I would have been happier spending more money to go do something else. So I think you really have to look at it and say, is this going to be important to me? Is this going to be something I'm going to really enjoy? Is it going to enhance the quality of my life in terms of my priorities? And then, of course, as you said, can I afford it? Am I adding to my debt to do this? If you're adding to your debt to do it, it doesn't matter how good a deal it is.
Yeah, because I think, you know, a lot of times people with debt think that these are a great deal for them, especially because they have debt. And they think that, hey, I can get half off. And then they see this stuff that, well, yeah, I might kind of like that. You know, they see the advertising come on. They end up spending more money than they normally would have. Last question, guys, which is, what about these people that are going on changing credit cards all the time to get as many points as they can, these bonus points at the beginning of, so I get an American Airlines card. It comes with 50,000 miles as long as I put $4,000 on the card in the first 2 months, right? And then as soon as I get those bonus points, then I shut off that card and I go to another card. Len, are you familiar with that?
Actually, no. I didn't know that they have special deals where you have to spend so much to qualify. I'll fall back on my credit card, my only rewards, or one of my two rewards credit cards, my Marriott card. I think it came with 50,000 points, Marriott points, but all I had to do was make one purchase, and it didn't matter. I think it was $25 minimum. That was it. I can't imagine a credit card that says $4,000 minimum purchase. I think that's just crazy.
No, the new,
it's ridiculous.
Yeah, the new deals are give people a huge amount of points to make them put a bunch of expenses on their card. So some people out there will spend all their money for a couple months on this credit card, get the bonus points, and then they're maybe flying free to Hawaii or something. Paula, have you heard of that?
Actually, I'm about to do it.
Are you really?
Yeah, I'm flying to Ireland for free this summer.
Wow. But tell me who that's dangerous for, because it seems like that can be pretty dangerous if you're the wrong person.
Yeah, it's dangerous if there's any chance that you're going to carry a credit card balance.
Yeah.
You've got to be honest with yourself. If you're the type of person who's going to carry a balance on your credit card, then don't get a credit card. Forgo the quote-unquote rewards, because you're going to be paying out the nose in interest and fees and all of that. But if you're somebody who's never had credit card debt and you know that you're just going to be putting your normal everyday spending on it, dude, it's a great way to fly for free. I mean, I flew for free to Paris last year. I'm going free to Ireland this summer. We're going for free to Hawaii in December.
Holy
I don't
cow.
I've hit the point where I don't believe in buying airline tickets anymore.
Wow. But I agree with what you're saying there, and it's what Steve Stewart, whose show we're hijacking here this week, which is pay attention, not interest.
I kind of like it here. I think we should just stick around.
I know, it's very homey.
It is.
But he says, you know, pay attention, not interest. Don't pay any interest. If you're going to do that, definitely don't. Miranda, have you heard of that? Do you do that?
Yeah, I just did.
You just did too, okay.
I just got a deal from American Express, and they're like, you spend your $3,000 in 3 months, and you get these bonus points, and it's easy to spend $3,000 in 3 months. And as long as, you know, it goes with your spending plan. I mean, I use all of my spending on credit cards and then pay it off. I mean,
what's the cash value of those points?
It depends on the thing. For the thing, that's really helpful, isn't it?
Yeah, thank you. No, Miranda, it doesn't depend on the thing. It depends on the stuff.
That's right. So, yeah, I'm a writer. Anyway, it depends on the program and what you're redeeming it for. I'll be redeeming it for my tickets to FinCon from Utah. So I guess the cash value of them will be, I guess, 50,000 divided by the $500 I would normally spend to fly. So that's out to be.
Len, I can answer that question for you.
Oh, good.
Thank you, Paula.
So the bare minimum that I will accept in terms of miles to dollars redemption value is 2%. Yeah. So to fly to Ireland, for example, if you fly United in the Saver fare, you can redeem 60,000 United miles. And the cheapest ticket to Ireland in August to go from Atlanta to Dublin is $1,200. So that's a redemption rate of 2%. And that's, in other words, if, for example, instead of getting miles, I were to have gotten cash back, it would have been the cashback equivalent of getting $1,200 or 2%. So, and that is the bare minimum that I'll accept. Any less than that, and I'm like, no go. You can get better redemption if you spend your money on business class travel or if you spend your miles on business class travel. It gives you a higher mile to dollar conversion ratio. But of course, you have to ask yourself, am I willing to spend those extra miles or not? In my case, last year when I went to Paris, I didn't have any other major trips planned for the year, so I had no problem spending a bunch of miles flying business class to Paris for free for two people. And that ended up being a cashback value, quote unquote, or redemption value of about 4 or 5%. It was amazing.
Wow.
This year, because I'm flying coach, like a commoner, it'll be only 2%, but I'll have the extra miles left over to also go to Hawaii. So, you know, it's a trade-off.
Yeah, do peanuts come with coach? Do you get peanuts?
And pretzels.
How about
that? Excellent.
Yeah, it's not either or, Len. It can be both.
It's Southwest then.
That's right. Hey, guys, just look at the time, and we are out of time to destroy Steve's podcast completely. I will just warn everybody again that these can be great programs, but I think the key is, Miranda and Paula said earlier, is if you're going to be running a balance on your credit card, these things can be very dangerous. And that's why credit cards offer them, right? Is they want you to spend money on them. So stay away from it if you're somebody with a history of spending too much money on credit cards. Let's go around the horn and talk about what's going on each of your blogs. How about Paula? What's going on in Afford Anything?
Sure. Well, on the topic of getting rid of debt, I'm going to be describing my controversial decision to pay off my mortgage by not this Christmas, but next.
Fantastic. And Steve Stewart, by the way, is just about has his mortgage paid off.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, by the time this airs, he'll be very, very, very close. Miranda, how about planting money seeds? What's happening there?
I am going to be talking about how I made a previous year contribution to my health savings account to boost my deduction.
Excellent. And that's a good thing to do. Well, it's a very, very good thing to do. Len, what's going on at lenpenzo.com?
One of my readers wrote in, there's a couple posts where she writes about what it was like living in Brazil in 1990 during our hyperinflation event. A very interesting story. And then I follow that up with a Q&A with her. So come on by lenpenzo.com and check it out.
And on my site, there'll be a story about what it's like living in Denver during cookie inflation.
Here in Southern California during my belt inflation, stomach inflation. That's right.
Or in North Parsippany for a great price line deal.
All right, everybody. Thanks.
Is that where they grow parsnips?
Oh, maybe. Is that what the chicks eat?
All right, we're just gonna let the music come up right on that. That's good. I was gonna say goodbye, but I don't think we need to. That's horrible.
Another day, another trivia segment. Joe's mom's neighbor Doug here, folks, and I just paid my mortgage bill, dreaming about a time when it'll be paid off. And that got me to wondering, what percentage of Americans who own their homes don't have a mortgage? So I used the Google, and I looked it up. What'd you think I found? I'll have the answer later in the show.
Hey, I want to reemphasize again, and I know I did it several times on that roundtable.
So this
right?
is like a re-reemphasizing?
Re-re-reemphasize. Okay. Do not do the thing where you open up the new credit card and get all those bonus miles.
But those are bonus miles.
If you're somebody that can't pay off your bill in full, do not do that.
But those are the bonus.
You're a financial planner. Uh-huh. I was a financial planner.
Those who
for
can't do teach.
For
yep.
16. Yeah, that's right. You remind me of that every stinking time. You have clients, and I had clients that could handle it, and we had clients that could not.
Yeah, but the thing about that is that it sounds so intellectually smart. You know, I had a client that, and you had somebody that did this too, I'm sure, where they would say, well, I can get zero, you know, I can do this cash advance on my credit card for 0%, and I can invest it in a CD. Guaranteed FDIC insurance CD for the next year at 5%. Well, these were back in the days, right? So why would I not do that? Well, the reason is because while intellectually you might be able to pull that off, if you screw that up one time, it eats up 10 times of doing it correctly. And the cost of making an error is so great in exchange for $100 of interest, $200 of interest, give me a break.
And if we took
or points or something like that, how dumb.
You've known Steve for a while. Mm-hmm. I've known Steve for a while. If we took the duct tape off Steve's mouth right now and let him actually talk
he
on
might
his
agree.
Own show.
He might agree.
He would say, don't do it at all.
Well, yeah, yeah. Which is kind of the side that I lean on, but
yeah.
Hey everyone, it's Trivia Answer Time, brought to you by Joe's Mom's Neighbor Doug. Here's the question. What percentage of people in the U.S. of A. who own a home don't have a mortgage? The answer? Fully 30% don't have a mortgage. By the way, if you're one of those people who want to walk down memory lane, feel free to step in and make one of my payments anytime you'd like. Happy to help. I'm a giver. See you next time, folks.
Well, we're bringing our audience at Stacking Benjamins, their favorite part of the show, to the Money Plan SOS show this week. And once in a while, we have this thing we call the top five. And the top five are OG and my crazy ways to do something. You know, mm-hmm. maybe it's the top five ways to pay off your credit card debt, or maybe it's the top five ways to get your savings started. Or this week, we're going to talk about something Steve Stewart's been doing, which is paying down your mortgage. Because paying down your mortgage for the vast, vast majority of people is a number one.
I paid off my mortgage.
I mean, you paid off your mortgage by moving across country.
Yeah. Well, it does feel good. There's no doubt about that. You know, we've had these discussions too. If somebody handed me, let's say my mortgage balance was $250,000. If somebody handed me a check for $250,000, again, back to the intellectual argument versus the emotional money realistic one. Well, actually, you're supposed to take that money, invest it, and arbitrage the interest and pay your mortgage off over the next 25 years or whatever. But man, it feels good just to write a check and not have a mortgage payment.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Out the door. Hey, so this is what we have this week, then, our top five ways to pay off your mortgage. Let's get moving.
Number five.
All right, so I'll go first, as I always do. This one's kind of a non-answer answer, but...
Which is most of our show.
Yes. It's like a non-show show.
We should have called Stacking Benjamins, fake it till you make it.
Fake it till you make it. So my number five is, don't take out a mortgage so big to begin with.
Mm.
Or said another way, maybe you should downsize. It sounds silly, but there are people who, your kids are off to college. Do you need such a big a house anymore? You move jobs. We moved across country, as has been documented several times on our show. And we are completely reevaluating all of the things that are important to us about a house. What was the case further where we lived before is not necessarily the case where we live now. The things that are important, the things that are not important. And that's going to affect the type and size and so on and so forth of the mortgage that we take out.
But you and I were talking about a friend at breakfast today, a mutual friend that we know, a financial planner, mm-hmm. who has been incredibly successful,
yeah.
making tons of money, doing great work with his client, still living in the same starter house he bought when he was a struggling advisor, barely making any money.
Warren Buffett lives in the same house he bought in the 60s. Enough said.
There's a huge difference yeah. between people showing wealth mm-hmm. and people actually being wealthy. Right.
Big hat, no cattle is what they say.
Oh, all right.
I'm picking it up.
You are picking up.
Y'all.
Number five. My number five is shorten the term of your mortgage. And by the way, I put this one at number five, OG, because I hate it. Mm. I absolutely hate it. However, so here's the deal. You have a 30-year mortgage. switch to a 15.
Yeah.
And if you can handle that 15-year payment, now you've just cut 15 years off your mortgage.
Importantly, 15 years of interest.
Exactly.
Huge amounts of money.
Yeah, you look at an amortization table, that's a monster amount of money. Here's the reason that frustrates me, OG. There's two things that frustrate me about this. The first one is, and before I even get to that,
sub A,
you can see the smoke starting to come out of my ears. But when I was a financial planner, this was always people's first move. Well, I took out a 10-year mortgage. Why'd you take out a 10-year mortgage? Well, because I want to pay my mortgage off faster. Really? So I need the bank to dictate the terms on how I pay off my loan. Here's how successful business owners do it. And what I like doing is looking at my financial picture as if I'm a business and I'm going to make much better moves. It's funny, OG, that so many people will make great moves on behalf of their business all day at work. And then they come home and they make these completely emotional decisions about their own money at home. One set of decision making,
which is
for the
why
boss.
You need somebody to help you with that.
Right, which is why an advisor from most people's corner is a great idea.
Yeah.
But you have one set of criteria, and then you have another set of criteria at home. So I ask people, why do you do that? Well, because I want it shorter. Here's what a business owner would do. They'd stick with the longest term possible, OG, and then they set up automatic payments so it gets paid off in a 10-year
period. In
10
years or whatever,
And now what's happened is I've given myself the flexibility of if something bad happens, I've got an out. Versus if I'm in a 10-year mortgage and something really bad happens to my financial picture, I'm going to lose my house.
Well, but I see your point. And I also see the point of the client in this example of how many people did you work with? How many people do I work with that say, I'm going to save when you say, oh, you need to save $250 a month for your kids' education this year. And they say, I'll do that when I get my bonus. I'll just write you a check for $3,000.
It never happens.
Never happens.
Yeah.
So maybe this is their way of throwing in the cards and saying, I can't trust myself.
It is. And that's why it made my list. I mean, it made my list because if everything else goes wrong, just go ahead and have the bank dictate the terms. But I certainly prefer the four that I've got before this.
Number four.
So my number four is refinance to a lower rate.
Oh.
Pretty straightforward there. Ultimately, rates are as low as they've ever been, maybe not the complete lowest, but if you're still hanging on to a 30-year mortgage that's at 6% or something crazy, or you've got a home equity loan that's high or something like that, it might be time to wrap that baby up.
I'm laughing because it didn't make my list. It was so obvious.
So obvious. You're sitting there struggling. You're like 4.75 on my list. Dang it. I'll come up with one that I hate. Here's the one I hate.
That's what I love about these top fives is that you do them and I'm, yeah, that's a good one.
I did prepare.
Yeah, you did prepare. What's up with that? So my number four is use your tax refund. And we're at that time of year, OG. Use your tax refund completely toward your mortgage. If you look at that amortization table you were talking earlier about the huge amount of interest that you pay.
I'm miserable.
If you're in the early years of a mortgage especially and you put your tax return toward your mortgage, and let's say it's $1,000. I mean, that $1,000 kills off just a ton of interest over a 25-year period.
Right.
Number three.
Number three is round up on your monthly payments. Oh, is that what you had?
My number three is round up. Come on.
All right, high five. Yeah, that was first time in a long time. First time, long time. Ding, ding. Yeah, so round up. So if your payment's $1,368, pay $1,400. It's easier on your checkbook.
You are never going to miss that money. You're never going to miss that money. You're right. If it's, what'd you say, $1,350?
Yeah.
$1,350, that $50.
But that was what we used to do. And I joke about it with clients now. And I know you used to do it too, where you'd say, you'd sit down with the client and you'd say, hey, I know you're saving $100 into your 529 plan, your $100 into your Roth. I think we can up it to like 125. And they go, yeah, sure, whatever. And then 6 months later, when you see them again, you say, you know, you're doing 125. Do you think you can do like 150? And they say, yeah, I don't see why not. But if you would have said 100 to 150 right away, or 100 to 200, that's just $100. You do it over the course of three meetings, and they don't even know the difference because it's $20.
Yes.
Or it's $40. You don't miss it. Give me a break.
It is a fantastic way to save sneakily. And here's what you got to do
sneakily,
here.
I love it.
When you round up, you need to call your mortgage company and have them take the larger amount. Do not trust yourself to round it up on your own.
Don't round down. That would be bad.
Yeah, rounding down might be bad. I heard a story about that just recently. My cousin works with people to try to help them keep their house. She works for
like a banker division or something.
Yeah, she's actually like a division of one of these government agencies.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so she was working with this woman recently who had a mortgage of like $465. But she thought, this woman, thought that it should only be 460, not 465.
Oh, okay.
And so she would only send 460.
Which is great.
And my cousin said, why don't you just pay him the extra $5? And she's like, because they don't deserve it, and I don't think that that's what I should pay. I'm going to pay 460.
Okay.
And so what's bad is that that's how she got into the situation she's in now, which it took several years of getting a little bit further, $5 behind, then $10 behind, then $15 behind.
Yeah.
It took her quite a few years, but she's now at the point where she's going to lose her house.
Yeah.
Just because.
Hey, life's like a box of chocolates. Yeah. Oh, wait, that's the wrong analogy.
I don't know where that's come from. Yeah.
Number two,
make a 13th payment. You can do a 13th payment in any manner you so choose. You can do that at the end of the year. Give yourself a little Christmas present. You can do it in dividing out your payments by 12 and adding 1/12 of your payment. This is kind of like the rounding one. Or you can do a kind of a combination, right? Round and add a 12th payment to it. But I think somebody knows the answer to this much clearer than I do. But I think on a normal 30-year mortgage, if you pay a 13th payment a year, it knocks off 7 years.
Ah, yeah.
I think.
Mine is very, very similar.
That's why I didn't elaborate, because I knew you were going to do this one. What's your number two?
Switch to biweekly payments.
Hey, there we go. So make 13 payments. Got it.
Now, mine has some caveats with it. Here's what I don't like. There are some banks that where you make biweekly payments, and they hold the payment
right
until you get to the end of the month. And what they end up doing, OG, is they're just taking a little bit more from you, so you make the 13th payment.
Yeah.
Biweekly payments only works better than your 13th payment if they credit it immediately.
Right.
Because what's going to happen is not only do you get that extra payment, but you're getting the interest on the part of the month that you're paying early every month. You're getting that on top of it. And it ends up being a big snowball of interest right. You save over and above that.
Well, what about payment. When you get the thing from your mortgage company that says, hey, sign up for the biweekly payment. It's going to cost you $500 to enroll in this.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Look and see what the fee is. Because if there's a fee, you don't want to do it.
Right.
You want to do it on your
just
own.
Just kind of do it on your own.
Yeah. And you can actually set that up with your bank where now to make biweekly payments to your bank, you have to do a couple things. You have to, number one, pay one payment ahead. Mm-hmm. You do have to pay a payment ahead. And then you start making half a payment every other week. But you also have to make sure, OG, that your bank is going to credit that appropriately. So it's a little bit of a pain in the butt to set up. But when I would help clients do that, the bank would accept it. 9 times out of 10, they'd accept it. And you'd end up with a much quicker payoff schedule.
Cool.
Here it comes.
Let's do your number one first.
All right. My number one's going to take a while because it's...
That's okay.
All right, mine here won't. We go. Do you got a drum roll?
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know either. Here we go.
Number one.
My number one is one that most people will hate, but it is the quickest way to pay off your mortgage, which is don't pay anything extra to your mortgage.
Uh-huh.
Decide how much extra you're going to pay and set up a brokerage account and put the extra into an S&P 500 mutual fund. If it's a 30-year loan, OG, put the extra into an S&P 500 mutual fund, because historically, nearly every time in history, and by nearly every time, I'm talking 95 times out of 100, you came out way, 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 way ahead on paying your mortgage down quickly. Here's the upsides. The upsides are you keep the entire interest deduction on your taxes until you decide to pay off the house.
Okay.
The second upside is you're going to pay it off more quickly because, generally speaking, if your interest rate, if you've done the thing you should do, which is to refinance your mortgage is at 5% or less. Stock market historically over long periods of time averages 10.
Mm-hmm.
So even if we use 8 as our number, you're kicking butt.
Mm-hmm.
You're just killing it over a 20-year time frame. The third thing is if something bad happens, that money is liquid. Now, that's also...
That's got to be something really bad. Like, this is your...
Well, that's what I was going to say. That's also a bad thing.
Yeah.
But the question was, how do you pay off your mortgage the fastest? It's my number one because that is the fastest way to pay off your mortgage. You do any math, that will get you there much faster than my other four.
Okay. Cool. We can just get my number one. It's dumb.
But it's your number one.
I should have gone first because yours is way better. This is very anticlimactic, especially since what you talked about at the beginning. My number one is get a 15-year mortgage.
All right. And that is our top five ways. That's our top 4.5 ways to pay off your mortgage early. Oh, man, OG, we are nearly finished ruining the Money Plan SOS podcast forever.
Almost.
Almost. You know, we like this so much.
A few more minutes.
Yeah, that's right. And here's what we do. Generally speaking, on the Stacking Benjamin show, at this point of the show, we are done talking about finances. I mean, when Steve's done talking about finance, he just ends the show. Which is crazy. Yeah, why would you do that?
It's a normal way to do it.
Yeah, we don't do that. Yeah. Instead, we keep babbling. And we talk about movies because you like movies, I like movies, and because we see, last year, I believe, off the top of my head, I saw 47 movies. You saw something similar.
Yeah, I wouldn't keep track like you.
So
I think that I need to, though, now, because the volume of them that I have to see for this stinking show.
So we see two types of movies. We see movies at the theater, and that we see movies on Netflix and on Amazon so that we can save you the trouble of watching movies that stink. We'll watch movies that stink for you.
Yes.
And so this week you have a movie and we'll find out if it stinks or not. And this one you saw on Netflix?
On Netflix. And I think it's also on Amazon and on Hulu for that matter.
Oh, cool. And it's called The Double.
It's Cassius. He's back. Cassius is dead. But once, Paul, I think you're wrong.
As you know, Paul was responsible for tracking down Soviet assassins we codenamed the Cassius Seven.
And you caught them all but one, missed Cassius himself.
He's dead. I shot him in the chest.
And survived.
This is not his work.
Oh, I think it is.
This is Agent Ben Geary. Probably knows more about your assassin than anyone we've got.
We'd like the two of you to work together.
You never caught him.
Because he's dead.
Then prove it.
So The Double stars Richard Gere, ever dreamy. Martin Sheen's in the movie. Also an actor, I'm going to screw up his name, Topher, T-O-P-H-E-R, Topher Grace.
The guy from The 70s Show. Topher Grace from The 70s Show.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't recognize him. But I mean, I recognize him, his face, but I don't recognize his name at all. In any event, this movie starts out with a killing of a U.S. senator. And it's a kind of a whodunit, and they have narrowed it down to this old Cold War era assassin from Russia, and they bring back a former CIA operative, that's Richard Gere, to work with this young upstart, Topher Grace, who knows everything about this old school Russian, you know, hitman, and they're on the hunt for him. And the old CIA guy, Richard Gere's character, keeps on trying to tell this guy, you know, just stay out of this guy's way. He's trouble. I hunted him for years. It's going to end badly for you and your family. And Topher Grace keeps on saying, "What? No, I got to track him down." You know, so they end up working together, kind of competing, but working together to solve this problem of who was the one that did all of this or who's in charge of all of this.
So it's a whodunit action flick.
There's not a ton of action in it.
Oh.
It's more of a drama. I mean, there's some graphic scenes and guys getting shot and that sort of thing. It's probably an R-rated movie, I would imagine. It's 100 minutes long, so an hour and a half.
I don't even remember this being at the theater.
I don't remember being at the theater either, which ought to tell you something. Tolerable. Interesting twists.
Not loving it, though.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't watch it again. I'm not upset that I watched it, but this isn't a raving review.
No.
So yeah, there's a reason it wasn't at the theater, and there's a reason that you have never heard of Richard Gere in a movie in the last 10 years.
Which is funny. Topher Grace had a movie recently that was about living in the 1980s, and it looked like at the time that it was going to be this great movie. So I rented it because it had only been in the theater for maybe a week, and it had this reputation that it was like one of the biggest box office bombs of all time.
Okay.
But as you know, I saw a couple of years ago John Carter. And I actually liked John Carter. I thought John Carter was a pretty good movie. So I watched this movie and had my kids watch it. And immediately there's illegal drugs. There's all these wild sex scenes. And we turned it off like 12 minutes into it. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to show my kids.
For the record, The Double got a 20% on Rotten Tomatoes.
And you're not surprised?
Not at all. I'm glad I actually didn't see that before I watched it.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't have. It's tolerable, but nothing.
Well, that's our show. Thank you to Miranda Marquette from Planting Money Seeds for joining us today on the show. Also, thanks to our regular contributors, Paula Pant from Afford Anything, Len Penzo from LenPenzo.com. Thanks to Steve Stewart for letting us hijack the show. I think we should let him out now.
Maybe. See if he's got any Oreos first.
And Steve will be back as normal time of day. And come check us out at StackingBenjamins.com. By the way, if you want to find Steve is... really You know where he really is. We were joking about having him tied up. He's over in my mom's basement.
There he is.
He is taking over the Stacking Benjamin show today and is having a wild time, I'm sure, with PT and the gang. All right, everybody, have a great week.
Len Penzo appears courtesy of the wackily titled LenPenzo.com. Paula Pant can be found at affordanything.com. The cast of this show has been compensated with pretzels and a year's supply of turtle wax. Any reference to compensation on this show to cast members is purely a joke.
This is the part of the show that we call the after show. This show, part of the show, does not exist. And what happens in the after show stays in the after show. You're not allowed to talk about it.
Nope.
You cannot talk about it. Sometimes we have funny stories. Sometimes we have just additional stories that we didn't think made the cut for the show, but we're interested for people that want to just hang out a little bit longer. This particular week, I want to talk about some of the other side of being a financial planner. Like, there's the part that clients see, OG, but I think a lot of the time clients like to kind of see the other side of the table. So here I am as a fairly new financial planner. I think I'm at the end of my first year.
And so very new, not fairly new.
Yeah.
Very new still.
Yeah. Well, and I'm at that point, as you know, like the first 6 months, you have more experienced people in all of your meetings. And so now for about 6 months, I've been off the leash.
Yeah.
And I am now doing my own thing with clients and coming up with my own strategies. And we're still bouncing them off of more experienced people behind the scenes, but I'm in the meeting by myself with clients. And you and I with mortgages were talking about doing some computing and, hey, if you pay your mortgage off this way, pay it off that way. Well, there was this investment and I thought I had done pretty decent for my client. And so I take out my calculator because I'm going to whiz bang them with the fact that I know how to use my HP 12C.
And which is the backwards one.
What's that?
That's the one you have to put like 12 equals 9 plus or something like that. And it gives you the answer of 2. Yes. You know, you're 3.
Yeah, everything. But once you get that, it's pretty easy to use.
Yeah, I've never gotten it. So I use a normal calculator.
Yeah, so anyway, so I'm flying through it and I get done. And this is like kind of a just a savings account. These people were trying to pay off debt. And I recommended they take some money and they put it at this bank way far away so they couldn't get at it because these people would constantly go after their money. So the whole reason we had it far away was just so they would not touch it. And I'm like, but the interest rate you're getting is, you know, we didn't do it for interest, but the interest rate's actually better than you think. It's da, 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 da. And I go through this thing and I know I have it wrong. And I'm like, okay, just hold on a second. And my client, I remember his name's Greg, leans forward and his wife leans forward. And I do the calculation again and it still seems wrong. And then I take out a sheet of paper and I'm working on it again. I must have wasted like 15 minutes figuring out this computation. And then I go, okay, check this out. We got 3.14% interest. And Greg leans forward and looks at his statement and goes, you mean where it's printed right here on the top line? Except it was like 3.15.
Nice.
It's the very top line. Like it shows the interest rate on the bank statement or it shows the name of the account on the bank statement. Then it says interest rate 3.15. I take 15 minutes to tell him it's 3.14. And Greg's like, oh, you mean like the one right here? Now, there's two things funny about that. Funny thing number one was that we wasted all that time figuring out 3% interest.
Right.
Who cared?
And probably $12,000, which was a grand total of $300 over the course of the entire account year.
The funnier thing, my client knew all along what I was trying to do, and he was just sitting there.
Just let you flounder. He was just, you know, life raft? No? Okay. Go for it.
He was just sitting there waiting for me to get all the way done so he could make the little point to it.
Nice.
It was great. It's like the, I had a friend who noticed that his neighbor was building a swimming pool and the swimming pool crossed over his property line, right? Just like maybe a foot.
So after this thing opens, he's like, thanks for the swimming pool, pal. Gloosh.
Oh, he didn't even do that. He waits for it to be completely done, mm-hmm. and he comes over in his bathing suit with a towel and knocks on the front door.
Oh, nice.
Neighbor opens up the door. Yeah, he's like, hey, I'm here to use my pool. Guy's like, what are you talking about? I have a pool. You can use my pool. He goes, well, I could use your pool, but really it's our pool, isn't it? It's our pool.
What a jerk.
Oh, yeah. Well,
how did that end?
I knew his son and the apple didn't fall far from the tree.
Yeah.
I don't know, because the son told me the story and he just thought it was very funny. He thought his dad was incredibly hilarious for doing that.
Yeah. That's class A jerk.
I know.
Right there.
Could you imagine?
Doesn't matter. I mean, ultimately, the survey company's going to get eat that replacement. Not my problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting that you tell that story because you can tell the difference. I can tell the difference in terms of the meetings that I have when I'm like, fully on prepared compared to the ones that I go, maybe I put like 80% effort in, not the full 100. And you get those like, well, what was the interest on that account? And you go, oh, crap. And then you got to figure it out. But if you're really engaged, you know that that answer, that question's coming. You go, it's right here. It's on the statement. Or you already have the answer. It's like they say about attorneys, never answer a question you don't already know. Never ask a question you don't know the answer already to.
Yeah.
So you should never, if you're a financial advisor and you happen to be listening to this show, and this part of the show, you should never hand calculate something for the first time in front of a client, because guess what? You will press the wrong button and you will look like an idiot.
Yeah,
it happens all the time.
I could believe those people stayed with me for a long time, too. Yeah.
Until you manipulated the numbers too much. And then
Yeah. That day. That was a bad day. Come over to Stacking Benjamins. We'll tell you the rest of that story.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. All right, guys. I think that's going to...
That should be it.
That's it for the week. Yeah.
All right. Let's let him out. He's turning blue.
Yeah. Thank you, Steve. This was a lot of fun.